Hello again, curious Kingsters, and welcome back to another episode of Digital Dom. So even though I just published an episode, this is our first episode that we're recording since I had my surgery.
Yay! She survived, spoiler alert.
I did. I don't know, but there was not really anything. It wasn't life-threatening, I guess.
It was life-altering.
I guess it was, but only in the way that, for one, I no longer have a ginormous globule growth on my reproductive system. And I learned that I have two uteruses. I don't know, and that has literally nothing to do with our podcast, but I've been telling everybody because I think it's so cool. I'm so excited to be a medical anomaly.
I think it's pretty awesome.
Right. Only thing I've learned in like the past week since sharing this information with just about everybody I know, not everyone wants to see your surgery pictures or pictures of your innards.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because if it was me, I'd be like wearing it on my forehead. Like, this is my insides. Look.
Right. That's literally how I feel. I'm like, but are you sure? Like, it's not every day you get to see this. But yeah, apparently
weird, that's though.
Not for everyone. Yeah, right? Like I was just texting a friend about it because she asked about surgery scars, if I think I'll have any scars or whatever. And I literally just have like a small incision that's like maybe an inch long on my left side and a small incision on the right side. And then they put the camera through my belly button. So I just have like those three like entry ways or whatever, but they're like super small. I know she went in, like my surgeon went in with like robotics, and I really think that either they pew-pewed all of my cyst or whatever with like a laser, or they like drained it because I know it was liquid filled and then pulled it out that way. I would have given anything to be on a fly on that wall, though, because, like, I have to wait. I still have to wait until Tuesday to even talk to my surgeon. I have so many questions. I have learned so much about my own anatomy. And I just want to know, like, I don't know. I got kind of, like, frustrated when I first came out of surgery because, for one, you're totally dazed and confused, you know? Like, I just, like, remember waking up and, like, there was some dude next to me. I was in, like, a wheelchair or a bed. I think I was in a bed. And he was like, oh, Courtney, you're awake. Time to go. And just, like, wheels me into this other room. And I'm like... did everything go okay? Like, is everything okay? And like, he like drops me off in this other room and these other hospital people are like, oh yeah, you're okay. But like, we can't talk to you about anything. And I'm like, what? So you just like pop out of surgery, not knowing anything, and nobody can talk to you about anything. The only thing they would tell me was that I could go home once I went pee. Like, they had to know that I could go pee and then I could go home. So outside of making this one motherfucker go and get me like 4 cups of coffee, because I was like, I'm like, I'm going to pee. Get me out of here. Right. So I make him go and get me like 4 cups of coffee. And then finally I'm able to pee and they like let me go or whatever. They wheel me out to my boyfriend who's picking me up. I get in the car. We're driving home. And he's like, so what did they say to you? And I'm like, they said nothing to me. Absolutely nothing. And I'm kind of mad about it. Like, what did they say to you? And my surgeon called him when I got out of surgery and was like, everything went okay. But side note, she has an extra uterus, which I've never seen before. It was literally like one of her like, hey, you guys, come here and look at this kind of moments, you know? Like, she like pulled other people into the OR to be like, look, she has two uteruses. And I was like, I really wish I could have been a fly on the wall for that. And just, it's fascinating. I really wish I had asked to keep the cyst, because one of the like nurses or whatever that I was talking to after surgery, I told her, like, they gave me the pictures. I had no idea what I was looking at. And I told her I wish that I had asked to keep the cyst. And I was like, is that weird? And she's like, no, people ask to keep it all the time. And I was like, I should have asked to keep it. That would have been so cool. But they were so big.
It was huge. They won't let you keep it in most states now. I think it's by state, if I remember.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah, because it's considered bio waste.
Biohazard or whatever.
Yeah, so they want to make sure it's like properly disposed of and you're not dumping your body parts in the communal trash.
That's fair. Okay. Now, anyway, moving on to this week's topic. So since the last episode that we published was the one on giantess, and I mentioned in that one that I wanted to do the physical domination. I wanted to go over physical domination next, just because it goes so well hand in hand with giantess and kind of like the thought process behind it. So while I call it physical domination, I'm specifically talking about like bodybuilder women as like a dominant, and then the men who are submissive in some nature or other to women who are bodybuilders. So
I think that's a good clarification, because I hear physical domination and I think like BDSM type stuff. So
right, or like CBT, yeah. Like we talked about, right? Like cock ball torture and like that whole like just kind of like the skin to skin, body part to body part contact, which I guess like in loose terms, it could be that, you know, physical domination could cover a lot of things, but specifically what we're covering here is with muscle worship and bodybuilding.
Perfect.
So for this one, I found an article on Vice. So we're coming up. We've had Men's Health, we've had Cosmopolitan, and now we're up in Vice for, let's see, the name of this article is Inside the Lucrative World of Female Muscle Worship, Where Men Pay to Touch. So, Vice Magazine interviewed somebody. They call him Johnny, quote unquote, and they go on to say, Johnny, 37, is one of many men in the UK who engages in the otherwise unconventional practice of muscle worship. Also known as stenolania, muscle worship is a sexual paraphilia where a person becomes sexually aroused by touching and worshiping the muscles of a more physically dominant partner. Male worshippers like Johnny are referred to in the muscle worship subculture as schmoes. The dominant woman they adore are their goddesses. For many goddesses, sensual touching and wrestling is as far as it ever gets. For others, sexual intercourse is also an option.
What do you mean by like wrestling? Like actual competitive wrestling, or just like struggling around?
And this is where one of those things where it depends on the people involved. Because some people will really only like playful wrestling, and others want to be like physically annihilated. So it really just depends on who's involved, what they like, and what both parties are willing to do.
So this is, again, one of those where like actual sex, like penetration or however you want to define like actual sex, is not like the forefront of the kink. It's just more about like appreciating the muscles or that sort of thing. It's very much about touch and not actual sex?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And so, and this is one of the things that I read in this Vice article, was that somebody had experience with, like, I think it actually was this Johnny character, but he had said that not all of the goddesses will necessarily have sex with the men that they do these sessions with, but sometimes it's just a matter of chemistry. Like, they book a session, say the guy books a session, he's in a hotel room with Miss, you know, bodybuilder. She's throwing him around, whatever. If that sexually excites her in any way, and then obviously he's sexually excited, then one thing can lead to another. Other times it's more about almost going back to like butt babies, right? Like, it's like having the experience and then jacking off to it later or before.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. So right. It's probably like the pathway to arousal.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, I feel like that's one of those like big things that you're learning, is that there can be so much involved in arousal and kink and fetish that might not necessarily have anything to do with actual sexual interaction, intercourse, whatever.
That's definitely something I've learned in the course of this podcast. I guess for me, it's always been very straightforward. And I'm just a very literal person, so I think if we're doing this, it's going to lead to this. Like, I just have no question in my mind if that's where something is going, and I've never really explored, like, arousal outside of having sex as an end goal. So it's really, like, eye-opening to me to learn all of these different things that people do. Murphy's drinking water through that whole sentence.
He's probably actually like a super loud dog, and you only notice when you're trying to record.
Oh yeah, this dog never fucking stops.
So another source that I found on badkitty.com/blog/muscle fetish. Basically, there's four different types of sessions that a man will typically engage with a female bodybuilder. And those are posing and flexing, which is self-explanatory. Basically, he's going to be in the room with her. She's going to do like those very specific bodybuilding poses, flexing, almost as if she was either at like a copper tournament, which I'll explain what that is in a minute, or any other kind of like live bodybuilding show. And then feats of strength is the next one, and that's going to be a display of power in lifting heavy things, including the schmo. So hopefully we didn't get too far into this without me explaining that, but that is what the men who engage in these however sexual sessions with female bodybuilders are referred to, is as schmoes. So she picks them up, she throws them around, she puts them in a headlock, she just, you know, she'll like lift like a dresser or whatever is within her capability of lifting, and just the man can sit there and witness and worship in whatever way.
Basically showcasing her strength and showing off what she can do with her body.
Exactly. The third type being muscle fetish domination, which is basically just going to be your run-of-the-mill femdom physical domination with a specific focus on muscle, right? Because there's ass worship, there's tit worship, there's leg worship, there's all these different things that men can like really hyperfixate on, and that is their fetish or that is their kink. And in this arena, it's obviously the muscle. So it's just all about like, she's going to kick your ass, but she might also humiliate you. She might also, there might be elements of CBT, cock and ball torture, or anything really. Anything that falls under like the BDSM umbrella. And then you kind of mix that in with a specific focus on muscle worship or bodybuilding women. That's going to be your key arena of the muscle fetish domination.
I feel like a key focus of this is that most of the fetishes or subsects or whatever you call them would be that the woman is still very dominant. And we see that as a theme throughout a lot of these kinks. But it's interesting to me because I do know a few people that do bodybuilding, or also I work close to a very popular like bodybuilding gym. And so a lot of them come in and I see them a lot. And I wouldn't necessarily say the majority of people that are partaking in this are like dominant women. But maybe they are. Maybe that's just their general public persona. Or maybe this is, again, a small subset of a community, because there's always a sexual aspect to any community. Someone right. always takes it there.
Right, right. Well, and that's the thing is that, like, of course, I'm going to guess, like, the vast majority of the women that go into bodybuilding, they don't do it for any sexual reason. But because it exists, they get approached by men who, you know, like, hey, you don't have to have sex with me. You don't even have to see my penis. Just like, let me sit in a room with you while you pose and flex, or while you pick me up, or while you pick the bed up, or whatever. You know, it's just like, I want to be in your presence with this whole thing. And then that's where it comes into play, especially in a super competitive arena that is so niche and so difficult to make a living. You know, if you have to get to like the top five in the world of bodybuilding women to make an actual living off of it versus just being a bodybuilding woman, and some man wants to pay you $350 an hour to sit in a room with him and flex your muscles or pick him up or even wrestle. You know, there's everything from wrestling to pillow fights to total like throwing him through a wall. Like, there's just like this whole scale that can exist in. Okay, and then the last one of the types of muscle fetish sessions is sponsored muscle fetish, which is basically muscle worship mixed with financial domination. So financial domination itself is specifically tied to or focused around money, obviously. But with the sponsorship in muscle worship or domination, that's going to be what I call a service slave. So that's going to be somebody who is there specifically to wait on you hand and foot, whether you need protein powder, whether you need an egg white omelet, whether you need $600, like whatever it is you need, this person is basically your budget provider for those things. And that's kind of, there exists that in basically every niche that there is in kink and fetish, because a lot of the times, and we'll get deeper into this when we do the financial domination episode, but a lot of the times money is the only or the biggest thing a man has to offer a woman. So it makes sense that, you know, that's going to be what exists for the woman to participate in the way that the man wants to participate.
Fuck the patriarchy. I created that one.
Right. Any thoughts before I just go on my hot take about this real quick? Because I just have a couple little anecdotes and then we can kind of open the conversation.
Not particularly at this point. I guess I'm just still wrapping my head around the fact that I never really thought bodybuilding was a sexual thing, or that it could be, but as we've learned, pretty much anything can and will be. So just, you know, take it all in.
Okay, so this is actually a little story that I wanted to tell on the podcast for like a long time, and I didn't know under what circumstances to tell it. But then when I was doing the research for this episode, it occurred to me that this was like the most conducive way to tell this story. So my first phone sex threesome was with a schmo and a female bodybuilder.
I wasn't even aware that phone sex threesomes could exist. Is that when two people are paying you? That just leads into a whole different realm of questions, but continue.
Yeah, so in this scenario, no, two people were not paying me. But basically, so what happened in this particular situation was that I had a quote-unquote schmo call me, one of my characters, and I actually can't remember which character. I was like trying to research it and find the conversations I had with it, and I couldn't. I was like, maybe I'm looking at the wrong person. But anyway, had conversations with this schmo one day where he basically shared a lot of pictures of bodybuilding women with me. And this is common with men, and it's not always bodybuilding women, but like they'll like to share pictures of like the women that they're jacking off to with me. And I'll be like, oh yes, they're so beautiful, and like lesbian tendencies and whatever. Like you read the room, you say what you think you need to say to like play the part, be the character, whatever. So I'm engaging with this guy about these like female bodybuilders that he's showing me pictures of. And he's like a full on schmo. He's telling me all about paying for sessions. He has like a regular bodybuilding woman that he goes to, blah, blah, blah. Then he calls me the next day, okay? And he's like, hey, I've got her on the other line. I don't remember what her name was, but it was this bodybuilder that he was telling me about the day before that he does regular sessions with. And he's like, okay, hang on. And he like pulls her in on the, and then it's like a three-way phone call. And basically, I was like the other party that was just kind of like the tease and denial bit of dominance. Like I was just like another person there while like she was like the main focus and was just like talking about like smothering him with her ass and like picking him up and throwing him across the room. It was actually kind of nice. Like I did a lot less work on that call than I probably normally would have because I was just kind of like piggybacking onto what she said because she was the star of the show anyway, you know. But I'll never forget that because I haven't had a three-way call since, and I've always just remembered that, like, I was like, of all things, of all the circumstances that somebody could have brought in a third party to this phone sex call, it was this dude with an actual woman bodybuilder. Like, it was just like, I don't know. Sometimes I still wish I had known who she was so I could talk to her because I just thought she was cool as fuck. But
do you think she was all, like an actual bodybuilder, or was she maybe also a PSO playing that part?
I think it was definitely one of those two things. And I wanted that for a long time because it could have, you know, and especially me who plays like multiple people, like I have multiple characters, you know, it's like very easy for me to believe that somebody is pretending to be somebody that they aren't. But just because of this guy's supposed experience with him having live sessions with women, you know, and he even sent me like screenshots of text message conversations he had had with her or whatever. So it all lined up and seemed pretty conducive, but I take everything that anybody says to me on the internet or the phone or anything with a grain of salt because we're all lying to some extent or another.
We're all just playing make-believe.
Exactly. But if I had to bet, I would definitely say that she was an actual bodybuilder.
Well, good for her and good for you for capitalizing on the situation.
Always. Did you ever watch Killer Sally on Netflix?
Probably not.
It's about a very prolific female bodybuilder that became really popular in, I think, like the 90s. And if I remember right, she ended up killing somebody or whatever. But then it was like a whole thing on whether she was innocent and how innocent. I honestly can't even remember the specific story. But what I did remember, because I watched this after I was already familiar with the female bodybuilding fetish, schmoes, XYZ, she had like a specific part where she commented about how schmoes were seen as bottom of the barrel, scum of the earth kind of humans in this arena, right? Because there are all these like fit people who are so focused and so driven and do all these great things and XYZ. And then there's like these like creepy men that are just like swarming around them. But she made a very specific point in this documentary to call out that she had never had any issues with schmoes, and she was always super grateful for them because they were so supportive and had so much admiration for everything that she did. And she was like, these are just normal guys that just have a fetish that, you know, they wanted to bring to fruition or whatever, and had like a completely different outlook as the rest of the community on this group of men. And I found that really interesting because I feel like when you do any kind of sex work for any amount of time, you kind of learn to have that like, are they a greaseball loser with like perverted fantasies, or are they just a dude with a weird fetish? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that is the difference of what you do and just being like in real life. You probably run across just in your daily work a bit of both. Especially I think people that are seeking out an experience might maybe have a little bit skeezier persona sometimes, but also maybe they just aren't comfortable bringing something that's a little bit weird to Gen Pop, so to speak.
Right.
It might be a little bit hard for them to just like go on Tinder and be like, hey, you look muscular. Do you want to smother me with your ass cheeks? So yeah, I don't know. That's hard. Cause like even in real life, like in the dating world or fucking world, depending how you look at it, like it can be hard to sort out the gross people from the people that just know what they like.
Right. And you know, I'm sure that this is something that does happen on like Twitter and dating apps and whatever, because for whatever reason, there's always the guy that wants to find what he is looking for in a place that it doesn't belong. It's the weirdest thing. It happens to me a lot with feet. Like, you will find guys with a foot fetish. I had this last week. One of my girls, one of her main pictures is like almost a MySpace selfie where it's like taken from that above angle, but like you see her whole body, and all the way at the bottom you see one bare foot, right? And this guy like honed in on it and was like, feet, 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 show me your feet, show me your feet, you have the most beautiful feet. And I was like, you literally looked at like one pic with one bare foot all the way at the bottom. Like, it's just like the angle and everything. Like, there are those guys that just like will hone in to where they don't fucking belong to find those things. But then there's also, as I learned doing the research for this episode, there's an entire forum for bodybuilders. And in that forum, there's like an entire section for schmoes. And the women bodybuilders can go into that section and offer their services if they're looking to make money. And all of those schmoes will be right there to offer their fucking money.
Somehow, there's always someone somewhere that makes it sexual. And people hone in on that. You know, if you can make a buck, if you can make someone happy, why not? Nothing wrong with a little back and forth pleasure and monetary gain. That's fine.
Right?
That's as long as it doesn't hurt anybody.
Exactly. It's consensual. Nobody is getting hurt. Both parties are getting something out of it. It's a win-win across the board.
I wouldn't have ever thought as bodybuilding as sexual, only because that's not what is sexual in my life, I guess, or people that I know. But I do like understand, even in the 90s, I think it's probably bigger because like wrestling was so big, and so women bodybuilders were a lot more in the limelight. Mm-hmm. Obviously that's still a thing now with like health crazes and the Kardashian butts, and people really, at least where I live, like there's a lot of really fit people that try for that try to have those really awesome like TikTok, social media, Instagram bodies. So maybe it's making a resurgence a little bit, and good for everyone, you know. Mm-hmm. Take care of yourself, look good, feel good, and make some money, make some other schmo feel good.
Right. Well, this is where, like, even when I found this Vice article, I had the thoughts to myself of, like I mentioned, we've used Cosmo, we've used Men's Health, now we're using Vice, and it's, like, all of these things that have been a fetish for a long, long time are now finally starting to creep a little bit into the mainstream and make other people aware, you know?
I think that's a whole discussion on just sexual health and general wellness in general. People are much more open than they used to be. You never used to be able to say, yeah, I will eat ass, and now it's even a joke.
Like, yeah, right now it's like you have to put it on your Tinder profile.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just as common as, like, sucking dick, you know? Like, it's not a thing. And so as more and more things become okay or talked about, then the more we're going to learn about these different fetishes and niches. And as you're probably seeing in your line of work, and as I'm seeing just in things like TV shows, everything is a lot more loud and forefront. And also, sorry, ADHD moment, but to circle back, I kind of said, like, it was easy to be a bodybuilder or, like, live your life, whatever. It is not. Like, the person I know that does that competitively, the poor thing went through hell for her competition, and she did really great, but that is a hard, hard, hard life. And if you are doing that competitively, goddamn, like, kudos to you. I could never have that much self-control. So these schmoes should be paying good money, because that is not an easy lifestyle to live.
Seriously. I mean, honestly, like, that – you put so much work into that body, it should be worth at least $350 an hour to be worshipped. Like, that sounds totally fair to me. And that was another thing. So, like, obviously I read a couple different things doing the research that I did for this particular – topic, and one of the other articles that I read went into how if you do this competitively as to make a living, you don't have another job. You don't have time for a full-time job. Like, giving your body everything it needs all the time to stay in, like, that peak physical shape, as far as, like, what you're eating, how you're working out, how you're stretching, how you're just doing everything. Like, your body is your full-time job, to keep it at, like, this, like, super maximum capacity of operation. And to that I say, of course, you should be charging men $350 an hour to sit in a room with you. Like, yes, this is another one of those large and in charge, super female empowerment type things where, like, take into account the regarding farting episode where a lot of men the one guy whose perspective was around the concept of breaking societal norms and what is expected of women. I think that this fetish kind of falls into that, where it's like these women aren't traditional women. They're the antithesis of a traditional woman. Like, they're like all of these physical attributes of what you would normally see in a man. They're not that soft, feminine, effeminate person. You know, and that can be really disgusting to some people, the same way that a fart can. But for a whole other group of people, that is the cream of the pop, cream of the crop for them, you know?
Yeah, it makes total sense. As we've discussed in previous episodes too, that pretty much all of these just have to deal with, like, societal norms and what people tell you is sexy versus not. And every single one, I'm just blown away, because I'm like, oh, I didn't know people found that hot. But people find anything hot, and it's very interesting to me, as I've said probably 1,000 times in our podcast thus far, but just learning about the psyche of human nature and how we all view each other sexually or otherwise.
Right. So I guess the only other thing that I'll say on that, because earlier I mentioned Copper, and Copper is a bodybuilding tournament that takes place every year in Arizona. And the only reason that I know that is because one of my alter egos slash characters or whatever that I play in Phone Sex is a female bodybuilder.
Do you, like, know about supplements and stuff just to talk about
No,
them?
And that's why she, like, never takes calls. we'll definitely have to have an episode where I, like, explain this whole character, multi-character breakdown thing. But she has a lot of content. She has a lot of videos and pictures and stuff. And so basically what I do is I take that content and I break it apart into a whole bunch of different pieces or associate it with different stories. There's so many different things you can do to sell content, like old content in a new way that people will pay for. And that's usually what I do with her. Like, she is one of my financial domination princesses. And so what I've done with her was I created what is called a PTV game. PTV is pay to view. And basically, like, you'll put some type of content, whether it's picture, video, audio, GIFs, whatever, into a payment mail. So, like, you put it in, like, a little, like, email that the client can click on, and if they pay the money to open the mail, then they can, you know, see what's in the mail, see the audio, the video, the GIF, the picture, whatever. And then usually when it becomes a game, it's like inside that mail, there will be a link to another paid mail. And you kind of do this whole, like, role play or storytelling or edging or teasing, or there's, like, a million different ways to do it. Like, one of my characters has a create your own adventure PTV game. But this one in particular, I did my first one with her and she made me $600 in 3 days just off of one video that was 5 minutes long that I broke up into different things and did a whole bunch of different things with and whatever, because I went to school for this shit. Like, I can edit a video, you know? But yeah, she's not like the full bodybuilder that you see when you, like, Google female bodybuilder. Like, she's definitely still a lot of feminine. Like, I feel like you can kind of tell, and this might get me in trouble or this might be judgmental, but I feel like you can tell the difference between the natural bodybuilders and the ones that are on steroids.
100%.
Right. Because, like,
at least I can. Like I said, I see a lot of bodybuilders in my area, and it's pretty obvious. You can tell the people that take supplements, or by supplements I mean steroids or right. injections or fillers, that type of thing. Right. It looks unnatural because it is.
Exactly. Right. Like, you can, like, tell when a woman is, like, fully physiqued and, like, filled in muscle wise, and then you can tell when she's, like, roids. You know, it's just like it'll look unnatural, just like you said. So yeah, this character of mine doesn't have that, but I do have, like, some of my content has is really focused on muscle worship, her lifting, her posing. One of the videos I have of her is at the Copper competition. And it's just, it's interesting because I am a content queen. I have over 400 gigs of content, basically porn of different girls that I use as characters and everything else. And
I just want to interject for 1 second to clarify. I don't know if it's clear to our listeners that you yourself are not these people in the videos or the pictures. Like, you actually pay to use this content, or you buy it off of people. I know we've mentioned it before, but I just want to mention it in this episode because I'm not sure if it's 100% clear that you yourself, like, you're not on camera. Like, you protect your identity and you buy content from people and you make it into your characters, as you say. So I just want to throw that in there for people that might be confused.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I feel like I do go off and it's not always clear. So yeah, this is a basically what we call content models, who I bought her content, and she just so happens to be a bodybuilder. So I actually learned a lot just like going through this content from this model about bodybuilding, because she has like a muscle worship video and certain things that it's not sexual at all. I've never seen this girl naked. Seriously, like it's not sexual at all. It's just about what she portrays.
Yeah, the human body, the physique, the muscles, like she's creating something with her body and wants to show it off that not everybody has, and you're both capitalizing off of it.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm actually really excited to do an episode where I explain like the content models and the multiple characters, because I think it's going to blow people's freaking minds that you can make a fuck ton of money not even using your own pictures. Like, it's ridiculous how much money I make and nobody has ever seen my vagina. Like, seriously. But we'll save that for another episode. I am going to send you the picker wheel so we could do acronym of the week.
What do we get? LTR.
Okay.
LTR. LTR. This so I'm a is... child. Go ahead.
If it helps, this one isn't like kink related. Like, it's like a type of like coupleship.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was going to say I'm a child. So all I can ever think about is like body parts. And I'm like, I don't know any LTR. Like the
legs, tits, and rear.
Yeah, exactly. Like what? Lesbian.
Let me think of it. No, let me think of a sentence. Hang on.
Okay.
This will give it away, but when I decided to move to California, he asked if we could be in an LTR. Oh, wait, no, that's LDR.
I was like, long distance relationship? I know what that is.
Yeah, no. But
I don't know, LTR.
The L and the R are the same word, it's just the T.
Oh, long relationship. Long.
That was basically it. Long-term relationship.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, long relationship.
Wow. Well, yeah. I wasn't expecting that on our picker wheel because it's usually much more kink related.
Yeah, that was pretty lame. I don't know why I put it on there, but
well, that's okay. There. I mean, yeah, I think it's good to know. Like you and your partner have been in an LTR, and I'm a little not on that spectrum, but also more or less like not living my wild life like I used to. So it's probably important to throw out there for like the, let's say, quote unquote, normal people listening to our podcast.
I think really the only reason that I included it is that it, especially in terms of a dom-sub relationship, oftentimes you'll find a contract being a part of that, right? Like submissives will sign a contract under whatever, a contract could be anything, any kind of agreement, whatever. But one of the main themes that can be within that contract is that the submissive will agree to and sign away to a long-term relationship. And that's something that I listened to one of our old episodes recently, where I talked about how subs can be the flakiest of all men. Like, submissive men are super flaky because of postnatal clarity. Like, they're super horny, their dick is hard, it's in their hand, and all they could think about is like the utmost degradation and the most awful cock and ball torture and XYZ. And then they come and that's gone. They're a completely different person. Whereas when you include that, right? When you include that LTR in a contract, it's like, okay, you can have your postnatal clarity and feel whatever you need to feel after the fact, but when this is over, I still own you. And that's kind of like how long-term relationship correlates in the dom sub world.
That makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, I was like, LTR, I don't know. But in those terms, yeah. Right. Makes sense. In the context of our podcast, that makes a lot more sense.
Right. Glad I could explain that for you. But anyway, okay. Anyway. Before we go off on like a huge tangent, let's just call it.
Before we right go now, off.
Right. Before we go off anymore. Add right. an hour well, and 10 minutes. Right.
Stay curious.
Stay kinky. Bye.
From the bottom of our cold, dead hearts, Sarah and I would like to thank you, Curious Kinksters, for listening to this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or other curiosities, feel free to slide into our DMs on Instagram at Digital Dom Podcast or email us at digitaldompodcast@gmail.com. While you're at it, hit the follow button on your podcast listening platform to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you're feeling extra spicy, drop us a review. It'll give us all the warm fuzzies. Thanks again, Curious Kinksters. Until next time.